And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars. Wow, we've got a great volume of secrets for you today. I'll tell you, these really are great secrets. Secrets that, you know, they're just not revealed on the mainstream media news programs. These are things that you're only going to hear right here, and maybe that sort of leaves a little niche for us truth tellers. What do you think? They don't tell you the truth on all the big radio stations and TV, so you just got to listen to it and, you know, get your ears open and be awake. I like that. Be awake. You know, the Bible says that God has made people, some people, the very fortunate ones, awake. Awaken, the Bible says. Now, you know, you have to ask yourself, what does that mean to awaken? Well, there's light and there's darkness. And in Jesus Christ, there is no darkness. He is totally light. In fact, 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 says that when Jesus comes, he will destroy the Antichrist with the brightness of his coming. Let me tell you something. You know, the devil is afraid of the light. And he tries to trumpet or proclaim that darkness is light. You know, in Freemasonry, your whole Masonic career is involved in searching for more light. You never get enough light. They're always shrouded in darkness. Well, Jesus offers the light. Isn't that wonderful? You're in the light, my friends, and boy, I'm telling you, sometimes Jesus gives us so much light that, I mean, it blots out all the darkness, and you begin to worry and wonder, wow, what am I going to find out next? What am I going to discover about the world or those around me? Some people are frightened to hear these things. They're scared. They're frightened. And when you tell them some of these secrets, they say, oh, no, that can't be. Let me get out of here. I've got a golf date I've got to make. I've got to go meet so-and-so, you know, Paula for coffee or Jack for lunch or, well, I'm sort of busy right now and, you know, they give you the bum's shove, I guess they call it. And you think they're rejecting you. No, they're rejecting the truth. It's like that movie. I didn't see the movie, but I saw enough of the previews to figure out what was going on when, see, who was it? Jerry? My goodness, they had the trial. Tom Cruise was the military lawyer. And was it Jack? Yeah, Jack Nicholson. Yeah, old crusty Jack Nicholson sat on the stand. And Cruz says, we just want to know the truth. You know, he was badgering the witness. The witness, Nicholson, said, you can't handle the truth. Well, that's the trouble, folks. You can handle the truth, but the world cannot. It's in darkness and it's frightened. They just rather not hear. You know, they're like the three little monkeys. No, no see, no, no hear, no. Everything is just blank to these people. And when you tell them something that's true, something big, something that they really need to know, their eyes glass over and suddenly they've got to go do something. You know, I'm watching the Super Bowl right now. I mean, there's an interesting story about deflating of balls or with air, some nonsense. Oh, they're all excited about who's going to win some cooking show or Dancing with the Stars or some silly stuff. Well, in any case, you know, talking about secrets, here's some of the things we're going to look at today. What Obama said about religion that gives you an idea that he's not a Christian. That he's not a Christian. And then Congress. Congress is, boy, you know, the Republicans won, didn't they? Now, what were the two big factors that they won? They said that the two greatest issues that the Republicans in Congress campaigned for or against, I should say, that caused people to vote for Republicans. They had the biggest turnover in Congress, and the Republicans won by a wide margin and now control both houses of Congress, the Senate and the House of Representatives. What did McConnell say, the Senate Majority Leader? What did John Boehner, the House Speaker, say? They said, we're going to get rid of Obamacare. That's the first thing we're going to do is get rid of it. Have they? And then the second thing they said, we're gonna get on to this amnesty thing that Obama's tried to pull the wool over people's eyes. What he did was unconstitutional. We're gonna revamp that, turn it all over. Have they done that? What have they been doing? Ever since they moved into office, all of these new Republicans. We put them there to do those two specific things. They can't even get those two things done. Oh, but they've been busy. Oh, yes. They've been very, very busy. Doing what? Well, you'll find out. We'll talk about that. And some of the powers of Congress that you didn't even know they had. And they pretend they don't have, so they don't have to do anything. Hey, did you know that I've been outed? I have. I've been outed. You know what being outed means, don't you? It means that you've been doing something or you are somebody that you shouldn't be or shouldn't be doing or whatever. And somebody found out about it and told the whole world, and you were outed. Well, I've been outed. This gentleman, he discovered my secret. Oh, my. I'll tell you all about it. He's got me. Oh, yes. Hey, we're going to be looking at the George Washington Masonic National Memorial. Get this organization that sends me this fabulous flyer on. It's actually a booklet, a glossy booklet. The light, I was just talking about light, wasn't I? The light of the George Washington Masonic National Memorial. You know, Juan and I were there about 3 years ago in Alexandria, Virginia, and they celebrated George Washington's 282nd birthday. I'll tell you about that. I'll tell you about my visit. Oh, boy. My visit and what I saw. It absolutely shocked me, what I saw at the George Washington Masonic National Memorial. Hey, we got all that and a lot more. I mean, we've got a packed show today. Well, now, Obama, in the midst of, I don't know, race wars going on and all kinds of turmoil in Congress, he ran off to India. What's he doing over in India? Well, he met the leaders of India. By the way, now he's in Saudi Arabia. Went from India to Saudi Arabia. Met the new king there in Saudi Arabia. And Michelle sort of made a splash. She wouldn't wear the wrap that you put around you. And I guess they wanted her to wear some face mask too. The burqa. They asked her to do it when she met the king. But she refused it. Well, good for her. She's not all bad, folks. She says, no, I'm going to dress like an American dresses. Why should she wear the Muslim women's garb, the burqa and all that, and cover herself up? That's sort of hypocritical to cover yourself up when you're in Saudi Arabia and then dress like she wants to in America. So she didn't want to be a hypocrite. Good for her. But it's not what Michelle Obama did. I'm glad of that. I appreciate her. It's what Obama said while he was overseas. Now, listen to this. Why he wanted to say this in India, very strange. You know, when he met the India prime minister, he put his two hands, the palms of his hands together, and slightly bowed his head, put the hands together in a praying position. Now, most people don't know what that means, but that is the Indian sign of namaste, N-A-M-A-S-T-E. What is namaste? Namaste means I am saluting the God inside of you. And of course, if you're saluting the God inside that person that you're greeting, then it's the God in you saluting the God in him or her. See, they believe then that an advanced person, like the Prime Minister of India, must be divine. Has to be a favored, chosen one, and a blessed, exalted personage. Now listen to what Obama said when he got there to India. He said, our nations, this is the, he actually announced this. Now listen to this very closely, folks. This came from the White House press office. He said, quote, our nations are strongest when we see that we are all God's children, all equal in his eyes and worthy of his love. Now, is that true, folks? I mean, how about the Hindu gurus? How about the sexual deviants? Many of these gurus, are, Hindu gurus, are sexual deviants. Are they God's children? In fact, in the United States of America, they say that 5% of the population are psychopaths. Out of 330 million, 5% would be about 19 million psychopaths. Are they all God's children? How about our prisons? Our prisons in America are full up. They're full to capacity. There are all those people in prison cells there for murders and robberies and burglaries and rapes and thefts and so on. Are they all God's children? Are they all equal in his eyes and worthy of his love? How about the ones he's going to send to hell? The sinners who refuse his love. How about the Jews in America who say, Jesus is a blasphemer. Jesus is burning in hell. And his mother is a whore. His mother Mary. That's what the Jews say in their holy book, the Talmud. Are they all God's children? Are they worthy of his love? Not unless they change. The Bible says they're of the devil. In fact, that's Jesus' very words. Now he continues, he says, across our two great countries, we have Hindus and Muslims, Christians and Sikhs, and Jews and Buddhists and Jains, and so many faiths. Okay. And said Obama, President Obama, we remember the wisdom of Gandhi, who said, quote, for me, the different religions are beautiful flowers from the same garden, or they are branches of the same majestic tree. Branches of the same majestic tree. Now, let's stop there for a second. Now, I ask you, my friends, is that scriptural? Is that biblical? Are the different religions merely beautiful flowers from the same garden? Are they branches of the same majestic tree? God, Jesus talked about the fig tree that didn't bear any fruit, and he destroyed it. He said, because you don't bear any fruit, I'm going to basically destroy you. And the next day, the disciples were shocked to see that the tree that had been very prosperous and growing and looked so good suddenly was withering, dying on the vine. How could that be? The words of Jesus. If you don't produce as a tree, if you don't bear any fruit for him, you're going to die. You're going to wither away. Well, is that true? Surely Jesus lied. Surely all trees are equal. And all religions are beautiful flowers from the same garden. Or are they? You know, there's a kind of a flower that is carnivorous. It eats some flesh. Was the fly trap? A fly, you know, be attracted to it because it smells nice and gooey and sugary, and the fly will land, and then the flower plant closes on the fly and eats it. It can't get out. It looks beautiful. In fact, they say it's one of the most beautiful flowers in the garden, this carnivorous plant. But it's dangerous. And I myself have found out, I worked a little bit in my garden, and there's some bushes that if you work around them, you get the thorn in your flesh, and finally you find out you've been sort of damaged, you've been poisoned, and you get an infection growing where the thorn went into your flesh, and pretty soon you got a terrible growth or pus all coming out. Wow, that was a poisonous thing. Some I see the birds won't eat. We've got what do they call those, Jerry? The that they put out in the winter now. They put out those little red berries, so many of them. They're beautiful trees. Oh, my goodness, I'll have to ask Wanda about that. She knows about the bushes. But you know, they have the bright red. These are getting quite large, these bushes. These bright red little bitty, you know, berries on them. Oh, well, I'll ask Wanda next time. We two old guys, we don't know anything, but... yeah. Well, oh, yes, we know all about the other bushes, sure. Well, in any case, the birds won't eat this one. They know that its fruit, these berries, are poisonous. They're lovely. They're fiery looking. They're red. They're gorgeous. Some people, you know, chop them off and take them and put them as flowers, you know, in vases in their homes. And they're so prosperous. They look so good. But you don't want to eat any. And the birds know automatically. I don't know how birds just know this from the time they're little critters. They fly around, they see what they want that's good, and they take it, and other stuff, they just leave. I've seen mockingbirds. They'll land in a whole group of different flowers, and they only pick certain ones. Those are the only ones that they know have good, you know, production to make honey or whatever. Well, in any case, some of the flowers are not the same. You don't want to mess with them. They're poisonous. They're evil. The same, my friend, is true of religion. Now, what Obama said was sounded good, and of course, he was in a Hindu, mostly Hindu. 90% of the people are Hindus. Others are Muslims and Buddhists and Jains and so forth. And they loved it to say that a different religion is beautiful, is lovely, and that they're a branch of the same majestic tree. Who is the tree? Who bears the fruit? Who do we branch off from? I mean, in fact, if you're not, I mean, how would you like to be cut off entirely so that you're not getting any sustenance from the main root of the tree? There's a lot in the Bible about that. Oh, yes, we're not all in the same majestic tree. In fact, it says the Jews were cut off because of their unbelief. They were cut off. Now, when you're cut off, suddenly you begin to wither. You have no sustenance. You have nothing coming from the root of that tree, and you die. That's the way branches do on trees. Now, Obama went on to say, in our lives, Michelle and I have been strengthened by our Christian faith. Okay, good. Now, what is this Christian faith? He just told you, wasn't it? It's a different religion, but it's the same as these other religions. It's just a branch of the majestic tree. It's just a branch. He goes on to say, but there have been times where my faith has been questioned by people who don't know me, or they've said that I adhere to a different religion, as if that were somehow a bad thing. So he doesn't mind being called Muslim or whatever. He says that's a branch of the same tree. Folks, these people do not know God. George W. Bush did the same thing. He wrote to the Jewish ADL organization when he was governor of Texas and told them, I don't believe you need to be a Christian to go to heaven. You can be a member of any religion. That's what I believe. Well, it's a lie. And he's spreading that lie. But the Jews loved it. They didn't mind it at all. That just showed how hypocritical and evil that the Jewish organization was. Well, anyway, that's our good president, Barack Obama. Now, let's go over to the Congress. What's the Congress doing? Well, I don't know. John Boehner doesn't seem to be doing anything but maybe drinking at the local bar there in Ohio. Now, I want to inform you, you know, I taught constitutional law. I taught American and state local American government and state and local government in college. Those are the courses I used to teach at Park University. So, you know, I pretty well know what I'm talking about. This is in the Constitution, folks. Listen to this. Who has power of the purse? Which of the branches of government has the power of the purse? The courts? Or the chief executive? The president? Or the Congress? Answer, Congress. Which of the two houses or the two sectors of Congress, the House or the Senate, have the power of the purse. Every financial bill must start with this branch of government. It's the House of Representatives. Did you know that a senator cannot introduce a bill first? A senator cannot introduce any bill that has money in it first. It must be approved by the House. And only the House can approve money bills. Now, after the House approves, then the Senate looks at it and approves it. Then it goes to the president. And he either approves it or he vetoes it. That's the procedure. Now, the power of the purse, it's called, always resides in the House of Representatives. They have committees to look over this. Now, they have what I would call an inverse power. An inverse power. They can either fund a project of the White House or not fund it. If they fund it, then it's approved. That means they approve the project and all the expenses to go toward it. They approve it. If they approve it, they send a bill over to the Senate and it approves it, then it goes to the president. That's how they have the power of the purse. But if they do not put money into the project, if they do not fund the project, if in fact they omit it from their appropriations bills, then the House is saying this bill is dead. This legislation is dead. They don't have to vote against something. They simply don't vote for it. You understand? For example, Obama says, I'm going to take 4 or 5 million illegal aliens in America and give them a green card. Put them on the pathway to citizenship. They can stay. We're not going to deport them. Well, now, this is against the law. He's supposed to be busy deporting these people. More than that, he's supposed to keep them out with border security. Instead, he says, we're going to give them all green cards. Now, Obama even hired 1,000 new immigration agents to process these cards. Now, how does he have the money to print all these cards? How does he have the money to pay the 1,000 agents and set up a huge facility in Virginia, I understand, to process and keep track of all these cards and of all these illegal aliens? How does that program work? It's the amnesty program. Let's just call it the amnesty for illegal program. Now, everybody's complaining about it. I complained about it. I bet you did, friends. And Republicans in general complained about it. And of course, we were all promised, if you'll vote for us, if we win office, we will defund Obama's immigration. Now, if Congress, the House of Representatives, simply would not approve the money for it, it's dead. Okay? They don't have to vote on anything. Now, there's the inverse power. Think about it. Inverse power. For example, if the White House would like to, or the military, the Pentagon, would like to build a new aircraft carrier, price tag $2 billion. The House Armed Services Committee says, that's too expensive. We're not going to put any money in the budget for that next year. So they don't even mention it in the budget. They don't disapprove the project exactly. They use their inverse power. They don't give any money for it. Now, isn't that sort of like real life? You may make $50,000 a year. And you may say, I need to buy a new car. I need to make $60,000. So you go see your boss and say, I want a pay raise. And your boss says, no, you're not worth it. You're only going to get $50,000. He says, I'm sorry, the company's not doing so well, and we're not going to give you but the $50,000. So you can't, that's all you have. Well, you tell him, well, wait, you're telling me that I can't have a new car. No, I'm not telling you that at all, he says. You can spend your $50,000 on whatever you want. Go out and buy a new car. Buy 10 of them. I don't care. But you're not going to get $60,000. We don't direct where your money is going. We don't make a budget for you. We don't tell you you can spend this for that or this for that. You just can't spend over $50,000. If you do, you're going to go in deficit. You're going to be hurting. So if they don't approve Obama's money, what is the House saying? Live within your means. But oh, President Obama said, wait just a minute. If you don't give me more money, I can't spend that. I don't have anything to buy all those green cards and process them all. That's going to cost billions. I don't have any place to house all these illegal aliens that pour in. I don't have the money I need to do this amnesty program. And the House says, so sorry. So sorry. But Obama says, wait just a minute. This is the presidential program. I don't need your help to approve it. I've approved it. So they say, well, Mr. President, didn't fund it. Well, I can't fund it without you. That's right. And we have not funded it. But you don't say anything in your budget about giving me the money for it. That's right. Then I can't do it. Well, now you're getting smart, Mr. President. Now you understand. That is our inverse power. You know, President Nixon once said, I only need 1/3 of the votes of Congress plus one, and I can control America. I only need 1/3 of the votes of Congress plus one, and I can control America. You see, they wanted all these things done. And they said, we're going to send you all these bills, Mr. President. He said, well, I'm going to veto them all. You're not going to get what you want. Well, we'll override your veto. We need 2/3 of the House to override it, plus one. Yeah, well, I don't think you're going to get that, he says. So I'm going to control you. I don't even need a third. I don't even need a third of the members of Congress to vote to approve my veto, and you don't have anything. Uh-oh. Uh-oh. Now, this is the power of the purse. The Congress, Mr. Boehner, the House Speaker, and your local congressman, does not want you to know of the inverse power of the purse. Now, they're all wringing their hands. Oh, there's nothing we can do. Obama's already done this. We're going to have to go along with it. Oh, it's just terrible, isn't it? We're all against this. Bang, 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 bang. And they take out the rubber stamp and give him the money. Money approved. Money approved. Money approved. It's a sham, folks. You see what they're doing? They say to you, we are not going to go along with Obama on this. But then they give him the money for it. Now, that would be like your boss. You go to him and say, I want a new car. And he says, okay, here's the money for the car. But then he goes and tells other people, I did not approve his car. No, I did not approve his car. But he did. I give you the money for it. So they're giving Obama all the money he wants for amnesty, for his program, and really for everything. What else? There's the amnesty program, the Immigration Reform Act. They're giving him that. And, of course, there's Obamacare, the medical program. They've approved all the money for that. So who approved Obamacare? Was it Obama? Well, it's also Boehner Care. It's also McConnell Care. It's congressional medical care. They could disapprove it by using their inverse power and say, we're not going to put the money in the budget. Instead, they are working hand in glove with the White House. They're meeting nights and weekends and setting up these programs, and they're doing it, and they're laughing at you and me. They're laughing at you and me, and they're saying these stupid citizens don't even know what we're doing. Wow. Now, when we come back in a minute, I'm going to tell you about a second congressional power that is so incredibly powerful. This power, they could change America with it. A little bitty power. It's almost unknown, but it's in the Constitution. Why is it unknown? Because they don't want you to know about it. Congress has a power that is so incredibly powerful. They can transform America. They can move it back to Christian times. They can set the demon powers on their seats if they would use this power. I'm going to tell you about it when we return. Just a moment. We're looking at some secrets today here on Power of Prophecy. I'm Tex Mars. Great to be with you, my friends. We'll be right back after this brief message. Hello, friends. Do you know about the conspiracy of the six-pointed star? If you don't, I hope you'll get my book, Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star. Do you know about the Judaic religion? That symbol, the six-pointed star, what its real meaning is? There's so much in Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star. Why were the Jews so desperate to get rid of President Richard Nixon and his vice president, Spiro Agnew? Was the nation of Israel, the nation state, founded in 1948, mostly by the United States, based on a bribe of money to President Truman? Did the Israelis steal hundreds of tons of uranium from the United States and ship it to Israel to make their nuclear bombs? These are some incredible questions, my friends, and I answer them all in this book. There is a conspiracy, and the Jews inside the United States are the perpetrators. Now, I have spent many years gathering this intelligence information, and I make it available to you now. The Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star. It's a big book, an encyclopedic book, and it tells you the truth. I don't know if there's ever been a book like this out there. I don't know if there's ever been a book like this. You know, I was on the Jeff Rentz radio show the other night, and Jeff says, Tex, you are the greatest nemesis, meaning enemy, of the Jews today. You are the greatest nemesis that the Jews have in all the world. Well, if that is so, then truth is their enemy. Because that's the only weapon I have is truth, friends. You know, I'm looking outside right now, and I don't see a tank parked. I don't have an apron and a jet parked out there with, you know, Gatling guns. I don't have a cannon. In fact, I'm quite sort of limited in that area of armaments. What do I depend on then? The power of God. The power of truth. Jesus said, ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Did you know, dear friends, that you have no liberty, you have no truth without Jesus Christ in your life? A lot of people don't understand that. They go out and try to set forth or establish truth on their own, by your own power. It can't be done. It cannot be done. In Christ Jesus, there is liberty. Isn't that an amazing thing? That's the exact words from the New Testament. In Christ Jesus, there is liberty. You have liberty. Now, the Jews are like spies. And they send other Jews out to what the Bible calls, Paul called it, spying you out. They have agents, and they spy you out, and they find out what you're doing at church or in your life or in your work, and they want to know if you're an enemy or not, and they put you on a list. Someday, they're going to use that list. They're going to go around picking up people, murdering people throughout these United States, just like the communist Jews did in the Soviet Union in 1917 alone. This is part of the conspiracy of the six-pointed star. And I want you to have this book. $25, add $5 shipping and handling. $25, add $5 shipping and handling. A total of $30. Ask for the book, Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star. I've asked around, why didn't you write a book like this to a lot of important people? Why don't you write a book on the Jews like this? You know what they tell me? They say, we can't do that. We can't. They've got too much power. They own this and they own that. They'd destroy me. Well, they haven't destroyed Tex Mars yet. But I'm getting pretty old, my friends. I'm, you know, maybe 10 years or so, I'm going to pass this business on to somebody else. This business of truth-telling. I'm going to pass it on to somebody else. But I'm not afraid at all. I've written this book. And others, you know, the Bible talks about the fear of the Jews. People feared the Jews. They still do. They still do. But this book is not a book of fear. And it comes to you just like any other project in a box or envelope. It doesn't say anything on the outside of it, so you don't have to worry about it. You just get it in the privacy and pleasure of your own home. You sit by the fireside or there, wherever you're at. If you're down south, I suppose you can, you know, turn on the air conditioning and enjoy the cool weather. Or if you're up north, well, then you're going to have to hunker down while the snow pounds outside. Get it out and read it. But either way, you're going to enjoy it, my friends. Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star by Tex Mars. For a total of $30 with shipping and handling, we'll get it right out to you. Okay? Now, you can go to our website and buy it. Use your PayPal or your charge card, powerofprophecy.com or texmars.com. Or you can call us up right now, anytime, in fact, during the work week, 8 through 5. Just call us, 1-800-234-9673. We'll even pay for the phone call, 1-800-234-9673. Or you can write to us, Power Prophecy, or Text Mars, at 1708, that's 1708, Patterson, Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733. And now let's return to the regular program. I was talking about the powers of Congress, one of which is the inverse power not to fund a project, to simply omit it from your budget. But there's another power of omission, you might say. Now, let me explain this. The Constitution has a section which establishes the federal courts. Now, there are three levels of courts. There's the federal court, just called the federal district court. Then there's the appeals court. And finally, the Supreme Court of the United States. Now, if you don't like what happens in the district court, you appeal, and it goes to the, you know, appeals court. If you don't like that, then you appeal, and it goes to the Supreme Court of the United States. Three courts. Now, what kind of cases do they select? What kind of cases goes before these courts? I mean, there's all kinds of state courts, are there not? I know here in Texas we have the state criminal court and this district court and that district court. And then there's finally the state Supreme Court. And the state constitution delineates or explains exactly which court will handle which kind of case. In other words, which court has jurisdiction. You can't take your case to just any court. For example, if Jerry over here wanted to sue me, let's say he just didn't like the way I parted my hair this morning. I'm going to sue you for parting your hair that way. Well, I don't know if he can get away with it, but he probably could try. Which court is he going to take it to? If he takes it to the wrong court, they'll throw it out. They'll say, we don't have jurisdiction about Texas hair. We don't have jurisdiction. He's going to have to go find the right court that's got jurisdiction. How do they have jurisdiction? Well, jurisdiction is laid out by the state of Texas in its legislature. Ah, yes. The state of Texas in its legislature sets or determines the jurisdiction of the courts within that state. Likewise, the U.S. Congress, the House and the Senate, set the jurisdiction for the federal courts. You can't just take a case to the Supreme Court. You have to go to the district court. And if you don't like what happens there, you have to take it up higher to the appeals court. And if you don't like what happens there, well, you go up to the Supremes. Now, what kind of cases will be heard? You can't sue me for my hair or anything else. You can't take it to the federal courts. They say, we don't have any laws about that. There's nothing that says we have jurisdiction. Now, if Jerry said, Tex Mars shot a man, we have the evidence. He can take it to the district attorney, and they can try me in a state of Texas court, a criminal court. But they cannot take the fact that I shot somebody to a federal court, because the federal courts have no jurisdiction of local murder cases in Texas. Now, you may say, that's a severe case. That's a horrible case. Tex murdered that man. It needs to go to a federal court. It might need to go all the way to the Supreme Court of the United States. Those nine justices, they need to hear this. Well, they're not going to hear it. They'll turn it down. They won't even listen to your lawyer. They'll say, we don't have jurisdiction. Why, you're the nine top judges of the United States. You're the Supreme Court. You've got to have jurisdiction of everything. No, they don't. Their jurisdiction is established. It is set by, get this now, the legislature of the United States of America. Sets the jurisdiction for the courts. Now, this is a great opportunity, friends. Oh, yes. Listen to this. Now, let's just say the Supreme Court is going to listen to a case where Texas passes a law and it says no more partial birth abortions. You know, that's when these butchers, these monsters go in and cut the babies all up, kill it while it's in the womb. It's alive. It's maybe in the eighth or ninth month. It's ready to come out. It's fully formed. And they say, let's go in and snip its spine. Let's just cut its throat and then take it out piece by piece from the womb of the mother. Let's have a hideous partial birth abortion. And the state of Texas legislature said, no, I don't want that anymore happening in this state. That might go all the way up the courts, federal courts, till it goes to the Supreme Court and they have jurisdiction over it. And they can approve a partial birth abortions, or they can say, no, no more partial birth abortions. But what if the Congress of the United States passes a bill and says, the federal courts will have no jurisdiction over abortion. Oh boy, that did it. You get it? You get it? If they don't give the courts jurisdiction, the courts have no right to rule on it. It may be an important thing. It might be that millions of babies every year are killed through abortion, such as partial birth abortions and others. It might be an important project, but the courts can't even look at it. Has the Congress ever used such a power as setting the jurisdiction of the courts? Well, of course. How else could the courts operate? There's laws that were passed many years ago, all of them setting forth how the court operates. You'll have jurisdiction over this. You won't have jurisdiction over that. Let's say the mobile oil company does something to Pennzoil in the state of Texas. In fact, there was a case some years ago. Mobile oil, I think it was, versus Pennzoil. All happened within the state of Texas. Didn't violate federal law or anything else. Just happened inside the state of Texas. And the case went all the way up to the state of Texas Supreme Court. The state. And it ruled. And it gave $1 billion, if I can remember right, to Pennzoil. Or maybe to Mobile Oil. This is many years ago. Think about that. All handled by a state court. Was it an important issue for the feds? Yes. But they had no jurisdiction. It was a state matter. They had no jurisdiction. Who can set jurisdiction for federal courts? Only the Congress of the United States. Oh, boy. They can say, you will take up these cases, you won't take up these cases. Now, was it in 1968 we had the famous Roe versus Wade case? Roe versus Wade. It first ruled that abortion was perfectly acceptable. Abortions. Now, we didn't do any partial birth abortions back then, so we still have them today. And they said, well, you know, in this case, Roe versus Wade, abortions are legal. Changed America. Since that time, we probably had 60 or 70 million babies killed. 60 or 70 million babies killed because of Roe versus Wade. What if our Congress passed a law and the law simply said, in future cases, federal courts will have no jurisdiction over matters pertaining to abortion. Instead, this will be handled within the states, within their court systems. Then the Supreme Court won't ever hear it again. And Roe versus Wade won't ever be decided again by the Supreme Court. It must devolve to the states. In this manner, the Congress of the United States can actually approve abortion or disapprove of it by limiting jurisdiction. But they haven't done it. Now, the Republicans have said every time they're in power, as they are now, they control the Senate and the House, they say, oh, yes, we're against abortion. We're pro-life. And they pass all these bills and they go and the president vetoes them. He vetoes them. It doesn't matter if it's President George Herbert Walker Bush or George W. Bush. It doesn't matter if it's Bill Clinton or Barack Obama. They all seem to be really for abortion. They lie about it. Oh, no, we're pro-life. Oh, yeah, you Christians, vote for me. We're pro-life. Now's their opportunity. Now's the opportunity. Now's the time to stand up. Republican congressman, Republican senator, you control the House and Senate. You say you're pro-life. You say you support life. You want to stop abortions. Then pass this law to set the jurisdiction of the courts, to not allow the courts to handle these kind of cases at all. It's been done before. I can take you back and show you precedent. This has been used before. This is the only way the courts can operate. Jurisdiction is set by Congress to limit or to expand the powers of the courts. Now, everybody says the courts are too powerful. These nine men in these black robes control America. Oh, they're so powerful. We've got to restrain them. We've got to pull them back and not let them operate unconstitutionally. Well, here it is, folks. Now you know how you can stop abortions. Now you know how you can stop everything. You can use the inverse power to defund amnesty. You can use the inverse power of the House to defund Obamacare. And you can set the jurisdiction of the courts so that they cannot rule on cases involving abortions. This is power. Use it. Well, they don't want to use it. What does that mean? It means that Mr. McConnell, Senator McConnell, and House Speaker Boehner are a bunch of lying jackals. And they're scam artists. They want to wring their hands. Oh, yes, 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 we're pro-life. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, we're Christian. Yeah, we're against Obamacare. It's going to break America. It's going to bankrupt us. Oh, yeah, we're against these illegal aliens coming in. Oh, yeah, we want to stop that. They are a bunch of lying jackals. You write to them. Ask them about what I've just talked about. Ask them about the power of the purse to defund things using an inverse power. Ask them why they will not defund these projects. Ask them why they don't set jurisdiction of the court to handle the abortion matter. Now, here's something that came in recently. A man named, I won't really give you a name. His name is Harry. Harry S. He wrote me and he says, "Dear Tex, I have enjoyed your shows over the years with you revealing truth. However, now, since the Bible says that in the end days, everything shall be revealed, so it is your turn." It is your turn. Everything will be revealed. He says, "Tex Mars equals Prince Henrik of Denmark. Do you deny it?" And he sent me these pictures of this prince, who I didn't even know existed, named Prince Henrik. And you know, they look a little bit like me. They really do. Now, Wanda won't like this because it also has the wife of Prince Henrik. Now, Prince Henrik seems like a nice gentleman of Denmark. And here he is with a wife, and she's a nice, pleasant lady, you know, and they're all dressed up neat like, and they're going around, and there he is. And, you know, this guy, Harry, sent Prince Henrik's picture to me, and he compares it to my picture. We look amazingly alike, like we almost could be brothers. Well, he says he's going to out me because he says, "You are Prince Henrik of Denmark. And you're masquerading as Tex Mars." Well, I don't know what to say. I mean, I do look a lot like Prince Henrik. I mean, you know, I guess the guy was being serious. So I wrote him back. Here's what I said to him, folks. You'll sort of get a kick out of this. "Dear Harry, I am surprised you were able to discover my secret. Since we are friends, please do not address me in the future as Your Highness. Simply refer to me as Henrik. Sincerely, Tex Mars, also known as Prince Henrik." I admit to it. I am Prince Henrik. Now, I don't know what that does for me. Maybe I can ask, is there a fortune involved here? I put the fortune in the power of prophecy. I mean, you know, we're close to the budget line, folks. We really need help. Maybe Prince Henrik of Denmark has a big fortune. And I'll have to say this. I'm not really Danish. I'm mostly Scotch, but I'm a few other things too, French, and I don't know what all I am. I'm sort of Heinz 57 in my heritage. But maybe I can go around and declare that I'm Danish. Nobody really knows your DNA. I've talked about that in my book, DNA and the Science and the Jewish Bloodline. But this man has discovered my secret. I'm actually Prince Henrik. I've been masquerading all these years. I have to admit it. I don't know if it can do me some good. Great. Now, the problem is with Wanda. You see, I like that woman. I love her, in fact. I don't want to trade her for this princess of Denmark. In fact, she's not a princess. No, she's queen. Queen Margaret II. That's his wife, I guess. The prince is married to Queen Margaret II. I see. Okay, that's how it goes. I'm looking at the pictures now. Wanda, you have been replaced. I'm sorry to have to tell you this. Wanda's in the office next door. Would you come in the studio, please? I need to tell you about a secret I've kept for many years here. You see, Wanda, I love you, but I guess I'm married to this woman, Queen Margaret II. No, don't. Wait, don't hit me with that. Wait. No, I'm only kidding. I'm only joking. No. But look, I do resemble the fella. Well, Wanda's not happy with this, folks. But I'll explain it all to her later. I think she'll forgive me for my indiscretions. I don't know what they are, but they're out there. You found out about me, Harry. You know, sometimes there's a guy on the internet that keeps saying that I'm a Jesuit coadjutor. I have yet to figure out what a Jesuit coadjutor is. I know about Jesuit priests. I know about the Jesuit order, of course, but I don't know about the coadjutor. I don't know. What does that make me? I mean, do I get some kind of a medal for that? Do I get to go see the Pope? I mean, I admit it. If he says I'm hey, I was talking with Alex Jones recently. He's, you know, married to a gal who I guess comes from some Jewish blood somewhere. She's a sweetheart. But Alex says, you know, these people keep saying that, you know, about my Jewish wife, and, you know, and she doesn't go to church or synagogue or whatever. She's just a wonderful wife. And he said, I finally figured out what to say about it. I said, what do you say, Alex? He said, well, I'm just going to tell everybody I'm a Jew. I said, you're not a Jew, though. He said, but I'm going to tell everybody that. Then they'll get off my back. I said, no, they won't. They'll really get on you then. They'll say you've been hiding it all these years. Alex Jones. Doesn't sound like a Jewish name at all, does it? Sounds like a good old English name of some sort. Anyway, if you want to think I'm a Jesuit coadjutor or whatever, have at it, friends. That's great. Or I'm a Prince Henrik. I admit it. I don't know what I've admitted to. I don't even know what this guy, but it's fine. Hey, the George Washington Masonic National Memorial. 3 years ago, I think it was, Juan and I went to Alexandria, Virginia and saw this thing. It's an amazing structure, and I discuss it. I have a picture of it in my book, Mysterious Monuments. You can order that from the ministry here. As for Mysterious Monuments, oh, it's a blockbuster. Now, evidently, they celebrated Washington's 282nd birthday. Now, I went to visit this place, and it sits high up on a hill in Alexandria, Virginia, outside Washington, D.C. And from the, you can go on the grounds below and just look, and you can see for miles and miles. Now, listen to this. Here's what they say in this booklet that they sent me. They say the Freemasons of course, of the United States, of the Southern jurisdiction, I guess they use these formal terms, says the memorial to Washington in its colossal form typifies the power and strength of Masonry. Well, he goes on to say, and listen, it says, the George Washington Masonic National Memorial reaches, get this, folks, 333 feet. 333 feet into the sky atop the highest hill in Alexandria, Virginia. The choice of this location for the memorial to George Washington was symbolic, being true to the ancient tradition of erecting temples and memorials in dignified and uplifting places. The memorial was designed to carry the message of human brotherhood, typified by the master builder of our nation. Now, inside this structure, as I went in, was all kind of artwork. And I looked, as Juan and I walked into this huge structure, I looked on the wall to the right, and there was a great mural scene painted. And it was some of our nation's founders inside a church. And it said which of the churches there in Virginia it was in, and they were holding a worship service. But all of the men were dressed in their Masonic garb or their Masonic regalia, their costumes, you might say. And I thought that was very unusual to be in a Masonic costume inside a so-called Christian church. And there they were. Okay, so was it a scene of some beauty and power? I don't know, but I noticed something. As I was looking at the scene, I noticed that one of the seats was vacant. One of the seats was vacant. Now, was that because a gentleman didn't show up? The church looked pretty full. But one of the seats was vacant, but I looked close, and it had something on it. Was it a book? Was it a scroll? Was it? Oh, yes. I'll tell you what it was. It was a serpent. A serpent. The serpent was attending the Masonic service inside the Christian church. And they put it in a huge painting, a mural, on a wall inside this 333-feet building, this National Masonic Memorial. So the serpent attended the Masonic worship service. The serpent. Who is the serpent? Well, the book of Revelation tells you that old serpent, the devil. That old serpent, the devil. Oh, yes, he was attending the Masonic service. There he was, sitting on a chair, all coiled up. The serpent. Ah, yes. I asked one of the gentlemen who worked there, is that not a serpent? And he smiled. He said, you are very observant, sir. What is its meaning, I asked? He said, that is for you to answer. Oh, for me to answer. Well, I've already answered it. That's Lucifer, my friend. And that's what this whole building. Well, I was sort of nicer. But I think you know what I was thinking, don't you, friends? Well, listen to this one. This is from J.D. Hayes wrote this, did his research. 99% of terrorists caught by the FBI are faked. According to a new book entitled The Terrorist Factory, inside the FBI's manufactured war on terror, in the years since 9/11 attack, they've told us about all the terrorists they've been catching. Hundreds of failed plots. But just 1% of all the FBI terrorist cases are real plots. They're false flags. They make it up to convince you and I, mostly to scare us, I guess you could say. Well, I have so much more. The Ukrainian Jewish commandos, trained by the Israeli Defense Forces, Ukrainian Jewish commandos and snipers inside the Ukraine. If you've seen the horrible movie, I think, American Sniper, then you know that these snipers operate, the Jews have trained them, and they operate within Ukraine. Oh, yes, we're going into a cold war with Russia, and we want to have the Ukraine as our possession. Meanwhile, the chief rabbi of the Ukraine, the Jewish rabbi, is an American. His name, Rabbi Bleck. What is a Jewish rabbi, an American, doing as the chief rabbi of Ukraine? Oh, yes, friends. Secrets are revealed. Well, I'm Tex Mars, friends. It's been great being with you today. We've looked at some secrets they don't want you to know about, or maybe they really do. But we have revealed these things to you and let you know about them. We're going to be back next month with another Secrets. Won't you stay with us each week as we uncover these things? Yes, tune in and discover the power of prophecy.